Then we'll move to item five, the ODF climate change carbon plan item, and welcome John Tokarczyk and Danny Norlander for this item, as well as any others you have on board for this.
Thank you, Chair Imason, members of the board, State Forester Dougherty. Again, John Tokarczyk, Director, Planning and Analysis Unit. The item that Breen brought forward was initially intended to be discussed in September, but we have finally had the opportunity to get it back in front, which is relating to the climate change carbon plan as called for by the governor's office. In conjunction with the executive order report that was put forward by the agency. This work has been led by Danny Norlander, and I will turn it to Danny to proceed. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair Imason, State Forester Dougherty, members of the board. For the record, I am Danny Norlander. I serve as the Forest Carbon and Forest Health Policy Analysis within the Policy and Analysis Unit of partnership and planning. And we're here today to talk about the ODF climate change and carbon plan. And this was something that was supposed to be brought to you in September. So we were hoping to be further along than we are at this point. But as the situation developed, here we are. Slide. Thanks. So as a quick review, we're here today presenting a work product requested by the governor's office, specifically a letter from the letter that was received by the department in late July. A copy of it is there, and it was presented previously and is in previous board materials, I do believe. So go ahead and slide. So how did we get here? So in March of 2020, Governor Brown signed Executive Order 2004, and we've talked about the requirements that are in that, including the report that the agency submitted. So go ahead and why don't you just progress through all of them, Jason? It was an animated slide when we so we got the governor's order and a variety of other things in there that I will kind of just walk through. So the executive order 2004 in March, following that, as outlined in that, in May, ODF submitted the report that was requested through the executive order to the governor's office. That was then followed up by the governor's office, and they provided a letter to the department in July 2020 that outlined that the department was to create a climate change plan. Since then, the staff has been working on developing that. So this really started to take place in late July, and so about 6 months ago, been working on this about 6 months. So moving forward, we will eventually have a full draft for board review and a public input process that will take place down the road. Like, so to this point, the first things that we did was kind of create a purpose, vision, and principles for the climate change plan. Purpose was to make Oregon Forestry a leader in climate change mitigation and adaptation, and the department would be a leader in promoting climate smart forest practices and actions that achieve our vision in operationalizing goals, implementing actions, and measuring progress to achieve climate change goals. Slide. So within that, we had a vision that we worked with the executive team to develop. And that was that the Oregon Board of Forestry and the Department of Forestry would provide national leadership in climate smart and socially equitable forest policies that ensure climate health, resilient forests, and a viable forest products industry in vibrant rural communities. Slide. We developed principles that would guide the plan and the implementation of the climate change plan. And those included that climate change is a serious threat, that we have less than a decade to alter the behaviors if we want to avoid catastrophic impacts, that we must be innovative, creative, and proactive in working towards solutions and not reactionary to the results of climate change. Also, that Black, Indigenous, and people of color communities have been and continue to be some of the most climate impacted communities. Forest policies will be shaped through the lens of global of social justice and equity, and actions prioritized to benefit historically and currently underserved communities. That one's been spelled out specifically within the executive order, and then a variety of other mechanisms that have developed since that time. And lastly, that Oregon's forest sector offers opportunities for significant sequestration and storage, both in the woods and in harvested wood products. So to meet all of the, to reach the vision and fulfill the purpose, the department staff and leadership developed 8 specific action goals. That is climate-informed forestry, fire response and fire and smoke-adapted communities, state forest management, federal forest restoration, urban and community forests, reforestation and afforestation, to maintain and conserve forests, and then research and monitoring. So there's more specifics on each of those, and we'll move into those now. So the first one is climate-informed forestry. And the goal under climate-informed forestry is that we will encourage the just and equitable transition to climate-informed forestry that optimizes climate mitigation and adaptation while maintaining a sustainable flow of wood products to ensure long-term resource benefits and viability of the forest products industry. So this gets to the point of climate smart forestry that was outlined in the governor's letter and by the board members and a large number of public comments that we have received on this topic over the last several months. So climate smart forestry originates out of the UN FAO. So that's the Food and Agriculture Organization about 10 years ago, originally focused on agriculture as a climate smart focus. It was adapted to forestry starting about 2017. So it's a relatively new concept that is being utilized and researched as a means to work within natural solutions and natural and working lands to help mitigate and adapt to climate change throughout the world. It has three main areas, including removing or reducing greenhouse gas emissions, adapting and building forest resilience to climate change, and sustainably increasing forest productivity and income throughout the industry. So this goal is intended to pertain to all forest lands falling under the FBA, not specific to state forest lands, which will be talked about later. Specific goal for the Board of Forestry and the State Forest Division managed lands follows in a few slides. So fire management response and fire and smoke adapted communities is the thrust of the next goal, and that is to modernize Oregon's complete and coordinated wildfire protection system to respond to the increased severity of an incidence of wildfire, and to promote fire and smoke adapted communities and wildland urban interface to adapt to and mitigate the impacts of climate induced increases in wildfire severity. And this is done through a variety of means, including prescribed burning, thinning, and other forest health treatments that are outlined later on in the supporting actions. Slide. State forest management. So the governor's office letter outlines that the department is to be a leader in climate smart, climate informed forestry in the region and in the nation. So one of the ways that we can do that is by leading by example. And this one is specifically lead by example and demonstrate climate smart forest management on state forests to achieve the greatest permanent value. So that would be taking place across Oregon's state forests. And I think that's about it for that one. So, slide. Our federal forest restoration program has long been working to increase the pace and scale and quality of federal restoration or federal forest restoration to increase the resilience to increase wildfire severity and insects and diseases. So this goal supports the implementation and recommendations of the Governor's Council on Wildfire Response, as well as the shared stewardship agreement that has been put in place with the U.S. Forest Service and the department. Slide. Our urban and community forest program is small, but hopefully will grow with the governor's recommended budget. And this goal is to increase the extent and resilience of urban and community forests and to maximize the climate mitigation and health benefits of urban forest canopy. And as we heard in our November board meeting presentations, there are a host of benefits to having increased urban forest canopy, and not just from a climate standpoint, but from also a health and population standpoint. And this goal works to increase that urban forest canopy and down the road achieve the benefits that that would bring along with it. Slide. So reforestation and afforestation is one of the primary ways that natural working lands have been identified to mitigate climate change down the road. So this goal facilitates and encourages the reforestation of areas burned by wildfire and afforestation of low productivity lands that are understocked or not in forest use. And this can be areas of low productivity forest land, shrubland, woodlands, agriculture. So there's a variety of areas where it could be increased. And in some areas, that actually brings back ecosystems that have been removed over time, but primarily as a climate change mitigation. So there are some barriers to this, and some of those are seedling availability. As we've been talking about, as we've heard in previous discussions today, seedling availability will be an issue, especially as we have large fires across the landscape. Workforce availability is always one that comes up. Having the right people to plant and manage the increase in forest land creates problems. We may run into some sector resistance if we propose converting like low productivity ag lands. There are probably some resistance to that, but and that has actually been called out by the IPCC, and that's what is shown on the screen there, is one of the things that is an issue with afforestation and reforestation of low productivity lands is food scarcity down the road as you remove agricultural land and put it into forest. And there's a variety of options that could be looked at for that, including things like silvopasture, agroforestry, where you actually achieve multiple benefits on the same acreage. And then land use considerations. Fortunately, Oregon has strong land use laws that have been in place since the 1970s, and that has prevented a lot of loss that other states have seen. And we have 98% of the forest lands still that we had in when those laws were put in place. Slide. And that leads us to the maintain and conserve forest. And we want to support a strong but flexible land use planning system as a cornerstone of maintaining Oregon's forest on private land. And that's been very effective, as I mentioned, over time. Slide. And lastly, research and monitoring. So maintain a research and monitoring program to inform policy and measure accomplishment and goals. And this is, in my opinion, the keystone to the other seven goals. Without the monitoring aspect, we're unable to know if we are achieving the goals or adapt to the actions to reach the goals that we are aiming at. So we're planning on doing this through a revisit of the Forest Ecosystem Carbon Report, our Harvest of Wood Products Report, and future work that's ongoing about the social implications, economic implications of, and climate implications of a variety of management scenarios. So that work has been started and is taking place. And we heard some of that through the American Forest piece that was presented in November. Those are just small parts of the research and monitoring side of things that would be implemented. Slide. So as currently developed, there are a number of supporting actions within the plan. These support the purpose and vision of the plan and are not tied to specific goals. Each supporting action likely works with to address multiple goals, and likewise, multiple goals interact with different actions. I'm not going to read through all of these, and this is just a few of the ones that have been incorporated into the plan at this point. And following board input and the public input process, we hope to actually grow the supporting actions and make those fit in well with the rest of the plan. Slide. So those supporting actions will take place using the DEI lens as outlined in the governor's executive order. So that's utilization of the equity blueprint from the climate adaptation framework that will be released hopefully very soon. And that the department actually has been working with the Department of Land Conservation and Development and the Oregon Health Authority to develop and then ensuring outreach to Black, Indigenous, tribal, people of color in the decision process. These are groups that have traditionally been underrepresented in the decision process. We want to ensure that they have their voice. And then include vulnerable populations in the decision process, including natural resource dependent communities, lower income and traditionally underrepresented communities, groups, and people. So since this work actually began, there's been a variety of things that have stood up, including the Racial Justice Council, the Impacted Communities Work Group from the executive order, the Climate Adaptation Framework Equity Blueprint took place or started working about the same time that the executive order came out. And then we will work with the Environmental Justice Task Force on these actions as well. Slide. So moving forward, we will continue to draft the plan. As staff, we will work with the executive team members and the board on what is in the plan. We'll also work on with the executive team and the board on the public input process, what that looks like. We'll incorporate broader work, including the climate adaptation framework and various other things that are milling about. We'll conduct the public input process that we finalize with the board and the executive team. And then ultimately, we'll bring this plan to the board for review. Slide. So the timeline for that is we're going to first determine the public input process. That will happen in the first quarter of 2021. Part of that will take place today and then down the road through the executive team and potentially further board conversations. The draft will be completed once we have that in place so that we can present that to the public and the board for further review. We'll get input from the public, input from the board, and then finalize the draft into a final product around the fourth quarter of this year. Slide. So that brings us to the considerations that I want to kind of have some conversation on today. The first being the public input process, and that would be a couple of options there. Now, we're not looking for a decision, just kind of a conversation about what the board thinks is the appropriate way to go. And then I want to know if the board thinks that there's any goals that are missing and have a conversation about that. So that's pretty much the end of my presentation, and I was hoping that we could have that conversation now.
Great. Thanks for laying that out and for also being clear about the sort of input you're looking for at this point. So asking board members with respect to both of these, one is the public input process and the two options that Annie has mentioned, and the other is what's missing. Looking to see, see Joe Justice. Joe, why don't you start?
I like the goals. I don't frankly see anything missing. I think it's very complete, and I appreciate the work that's been done. I think the more opportunity we can have for public input, I think we should use that. And I don't know your options there. I want to make sure that we provide that opportunity. I'll just be very interested in the you know, the measurable goals that we begin to, you know, how we're going to measure success against these things. And of course, I have a very special interest in federal forest restoration and the work of the governor's, you know, wildfire council and the very lawful, you know, the very, you know, the understanding of all the the tremendous amount of restoration that has to happen on federal forests and how these goals and how we measure that, our success towards those very lofty goals are measured. So, you know, that's really my comment. Thank you.
And Brenda?
Yeah, thank you. Danny, could you put up the list of goals again that you had up there just a few minutes ago? There were a few comments I had. One, I want to echo Joe's comment. I think that what strikes me is goals that can be quantified and measured and monitored so that we can understand whether or not we're making progress. And so that was one piece. And then one of the goals was research, I think. If it's not part of that goal, then I would think monitoring would be a part of that goal. Yeah, thank you for that. Oh, it's already there, research and monitoring. But for each one of these eight, I think it would be really helpful to have identified metrics associated with each of them so that you can implement a monitoring plan and a monitoring program to ensure that we're making progress. You know, one thing that struck me was the recent testimony that we received by the Oregon League of Women Voters, and I thought that they laid out, you know, quite a few points and questions that really do point to the need for some metrics that we need to identify here. Relative to your question about, you know, whether we have board input and then public comment and then board input again, I would think, given the level of interest in board members currently, and I would assume that there probably will be some as new board members are appointed, keeping the board engaged throughout this would be a really good idea. But I also agree with Joe that the more public input that we can get, the better off we'll be to be sure that we're making decisions that are going to be understood by the general public. So I would opt for the first one, but I think that the second one is okay as long as you can keep us informed and engaged.
I think our intention is to continue to engage with the board members throughout this whole process, as we have been the last few months.
Yeah, thanks, Danny. That's great. The other thing that you alluded to in the climate-informed forestry was the point about greenhouse gas emissions, and then there are a whole lot of other suggestions and great ideas that you have in your goals. And just as a point of curiosity from my part, I was wondering if you could summarize quickly the guidance that you've provided to State Forest Division regarding their plans for salvage logging and other activities on the Santiam.
Danny, it appears you are frozen.
Sorry, Danny.
Can you guys hear me?
Yeah. And now, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Can you see me moving?
Yes.
Bobblehead. Okay. I'm using my phone, so at least you have my audio, but I can't unmute myself if I'm frozen. So. The joys of the virtual environment. John may have a little bit more input on the State Forest interaction. He's been involved with some of the work around that more than I have. So we haven't had direct conversation with the State Forest at this point. At least I haven't.
Just to confirm what Danny just said, and in respect to your question, Brenda, with respect to the Santiam, that conversation hasn't occurred explicitly.
Great. Thanks. Thanks for letting me know that. I find that a little bit troubling.
Okay. More questions or comments, Brenda?
No more from me. Thank you, Tom.
All right. Jim?
You're on mute, Jim.
Jim Kelly?
Yeah, could you not hear me? Could you not hear me?
For a minute there, we can hear you now.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know what went on there. All right. I'm concerned about process. In some of these areas, there's obviously not a lot of meat on the bones. And I'll use state forest as an example. So we've got essentially a platitude out there saying we'd like to lead by example there. And if that's all we're going to do and then put that out to stakeholder comments and or input, who's really providing the leadership? Shouldn't staff be starting to present under something like State Forest? Here's some of the ideas that are being considered, or do you really want that to be completely essentially from stakeholders? And I think that applies to some of these other areas as well. So I know what your comment would be on that.
Well, so in the draft forest management plan, there's a whole section on climate change. And I would argue that state forests is already close to optimal rotation age on average for carbon sequestration because of their other goals, such for greatest permanent value, habitat. The data bears it out. Speaking of metrics, that they have the highest per acre carbon sequestration rate of any land. It's not significantly higher than industrial, but it's the rate is the highest numerically and at the highest overall. And they are storing more carbon per acre than represented by the ownership. So I think they're already showing some leadership in a very different kind of forestry with managing for greatest permanent value. And so, you know, one of the challenges of creating a very subject-oriented work plan is that we are getting input and review by all the divisions. But it, you know, so there will be more meat to the bone, but we didn't want to bring you a lot of meat to the bones and have you dive into the weeds until we were sure we were being inclusive enough in the goals. And then we can, you know, try to stay at a high level first and get your direction there before we go on. I hope, does that make sense?
It does make sense. I think it's helpful, but I mean, Peter, in terms of the state forest example, I mean, that was what some of the criticism of the first response to the governor was just kind of a list of what we're already doing. And, yeah, I think we need to be moving beyond, that, approach, with other ideas, more meat on the bones. Thank you.
Sure thing.
Any, Brenda, you've got a hand up.
Yeah, just wanted to follow up on that conversation regarding state forests. You know, I would love to see the data that would illustrate that state forests are already sequestering more carbon than any other landowner in the state of Oregon, given the rotation ages that they're proposing in their forest management plans. That certainly would be at odds with what some of the research is indicating for us. So maybe, Peter, you can share that with the board?
We have shared it. It's in the Forest Ecosystem Carbon Report. It's in the details, but I think it's...
Well, it doesn't include the studies done by Bev Law and others. So it's clearly a difference of interpretation of existing research.
So, yeah, and I wasn't talking about research. I was talking about well, again, it's a model, but it's the based on the actual data collected across all ownership. Again, there's a wide degree of variance among ownerships because of number of plots. But as you heard in November, we're also intensifying the number of plots on State 4. So it's based on.
So you're referring to the FAA data analysis?
Yes.
Oh, well, we need to be dealing with carbon sequestration with a little bit more grain than FIA data plots across multiple ownerships. So, yeah, again, I'd love to see the data that would illustrate that state forest management is sequestering more carbon than other land ownerships. I just have not seen that level of detail yet.
Okay. Danny, on the question about public input, I think the practical matter is that if you get input from the board and then you go through a public input process, you'll be bringing that back to the board. You'll be advising the board, I would assume, of what you're gaining through that process. And it will be unavoidable, and also a good thing, that the board will provide you with some reaction to that. So you, in effect, you'll be doing that, whether it's a formal part of the process or not. So I mean, and I think that's probably a good thing that you do the first option, which also I think recognizes the reality. So just in terms of my own response on that.
Okay. So what I'm kind of hearing is that involving the board as we go along and kind of having a simultaneous public process is what people are thinking is a good approach. Okay. And that's kind of what we have been leaning towards. And I just wanted to clarify that everyone's good with that.
Yeah.
And I do want to, one thing that I think has been missing and that may be on me for not clarifying it in the pre-board materials and the staff report is that what the attachment that was provided is kind of a snippet of what's been developed at this point. So we wanted to get the higher level stuff as Peter outlined so that we could make sure that there was alignment with the board and that we weren't going down a road where we have to do continual revision to get to the point where we want that the board sees where we should be. So the goals, the supporting actions, all of that has been fleshed out quite a bit at this point already. So I don't want people, and we did get some public comments that seem to have that understanding or misunderstanding there. So I just wanted to make that clear that we are further along than just that at this point. But because this was the initial time that we were bringing it to the board, we just wanted to have that high level look on things. So.
Great. Anything else then on this topic before we, Jim, Kelly?
Yeah, I just wanted to say that if Danny and all can help us as we go forward, because we've got quite a list here of areas that we can be working on, and we all know that timing is important in terms of taking action soon. So I'm really going to be paying attention to what is the lowest hanging fruit, and of course staff's going to be often in the best position to be able to advise us on that. So just so you know that we, at least speaking for myself, have a keen interest to as we're going forward to get that advice back to us.
Great. Sorry, did I interrupt, Jim?
That's it.
Thanks for that, Jim. And we kind of, in the policy option package, I think we have a mix of low-hanging fruit. We could start moving very quickly. One of those is in the urban forestry program. They're ready to go, except for capacity. And there's a good body of work out there and a lot of cooperators. And I kind of hinted at it in my closing and my state forester comments, but we could really use your help getting that policy option package. You know how controversial sometimes any kind of climate work is in the Capitol, but I think you've talked before about utilizing board members for supporting ledge concepts or ideas at the legislature, and this is in the governor's recommended budget. So I would love to follow up with you. And one low-hanging fruit would be to get the resources that we really could use to really move forward on this.